Good morning. It's a blessing to have you with us this Lord's Day. Coming up on May the 6th, we have something we've been talking about that I want to make sure everybody's clear about, and that is a Teaching Rockets training seminar for those longing to be better teachers and students of God's Word. So it is for anyone who's involved in teaching, anybody that wants to be involved in a teaching program. And then really it gets everybody because it's for everybody who wants to be a better student of God's Word. And so it's going to be about how do we study God's Word, how do we understand His Word, and then how do we teach that to others. It's principles that will help reinforce the importance of the Bible school program. In all of our Bible classes, 7th grade and up, we'll be in here in the morning for Bible class on keys to a better Bible study. And then during the worship hour, he will talk about the importance of the education program, and it's a lesson to encourage us all to be involved in our Sunday morning Bible school and Wednesday night Bible school program. And then we'll have a light lunch together in the back, and then the afternoon sessions will be in the back. And we'll have three sessions, one on goals of the Bible class, what we want to accomplish and what you should desire to accomplish in our Bible classes. And then session two, how do you prepare and deliver a lesson, whether that's for a young child's class, young children's class, or for a adult class. How do you begin preparing that lesson and deliver it? And then session three, well, how do you handle the classroom dynamics of the class? In other words, if you have children who maybe are speaking a lot and you're trying to handle that, or controlling the different dynamics and trying to get discussion in the adult class. And so a session on classroom dynamics and ending with the thoughts on the teacher's spiritual life and praying and thinking about those things. Michael Whitworth does this as his profession as well as being an author. He has written numerous commentaries and books for Bible classes, and then he goes around teaching this seminar throughout the states. And so I would encourage you to make sure on May the 6th that you're wanting to be here with us. We also are going to need some volunteers to help prepare sandwiches. We'll just do different types of sandwiches for lunch and fruit and desserts. And then if we could have some that maybe some of our more experienced teachers to volunteer to take a session in the afternoon that they will provide childcare for some of the young moms so that they can attend that class as well. I think that would be very helpful. And so we'd like to have volunteer child care for each of the three sessions. And we don't want to put that burden on anybody to have to do it all three, but if we could rotate that, it would help a lot. Everybody will benefit from this, and it's for teachers, future teachers, aides, and Bible students. And we will not have evening service that day. We'll have the seminar in the back, and after it will end at about 4 o'clock. And so we encourage you to be involved in that. I think this could be a really beneficial thing for our church family, for our education program, to continue thinking about how we can make our education program better and how we can make ourselves better as teachers and as Bible students. So that's, and looking at that, be thinking about signing up for that. Of course, we have the big thing this week has been mentioned is the ladies' night coming up on Friday night. And so we want to encourage all of our ladies to be involved in that and be bringing their friends to come out and hear Celine Sparks. Amanda's heard Celine several times, and she has a lot of humor, but she also has a lot of encouraging biblical truths to help change your life. And so be a part of that on Friday night. In our study of 1 Corinthians, we have arrived at chapter 11. Now, last week, chapter 11, really, the people who divided it into chapters back in the 1200s could have really divided this into two chapters, because chapter 11 is two key components. The first section, verses 2 through 18 or 16, are about head coverings, and thankfully that was last week. If you're interested in that, you'll have to get the sermon from that. This week, we're on the second section, verse 17 through the end of the chapter, which deals with the Lord's Supper. And it's really the longest section in the New Testament dealing with the Lord's Supper that we see after the Gospels. And it records the early church participating in the Lord's Supper. And so we're going to be studying and thinking about the Lord's Supper this morning. I don't know if you've been able to attend what our nation's capital and visit some of the memorials there. In Austin's last leader speech, he used the concept of the Lincoln Memorial in thinking about the memorial of the Lord's Supper. And I thought that was a very powerful thought. Because when you think about how many people, in studying for that, we learned that, for example, the Lincoln Memorial, some 3 million people visit it each year. When you think about the Jefferson Memorial or the Washington Memorial, all three of these, as well as the Franklin Delano Roosevelt Memorial and the World War II Memorial, we have the Vietnam Memorial, we have these various memorials in Washington, D.C., and millions of people visit them each year. And they pay honor, they learn from our history. And we, in the war memorials, we remember our patriotic soldiers who gave their life for our country. In the presidential memorials, we remember what these presidents stood for and how they helped lead us to the nation we are today. When we think about these memorials, they are mortar and granite. They are engraved words on a sheet of marble. And they are something you go and attend, you go and visit, but then you leave. And I say many of us in this room have never even gone to Washington, D.C. and visited these. But the memorial that we are going to talk about this morning is far greater and far more significant. And when you think about Christ having memorials, there are some very significant memorials for Christ in the world. For example, we might think about the large statue of Christ in Rio de Janeiro. This huge image of Jesus, of Him hanging on the cross. You might think about when you're going across the river there by Wycliffe, the cross that is there. And you can see that cross, and it's a beautiful thing. But those memorials were not instituted or established by Jesus. They were done by His followers later on, but they don't have a biblical or religious directive from God to establish or build them. But Christ, when He was here on this earth, established one memorial that is not made of granite or mortar or doesn't have engraved words on it. But it's a memorial that is living. And it's a memorial that is simple. It is a memorial that still involves not just you and I, but millions of people across the globe who can come together and honor and remember, but also have significance for how we ought to live today. And so Christ's memorial is far greater than these memorials we see in Washington, D.C. or other places. I want to focus in on three key words that relate to the memorial of Christ. And the first one is the term memorial. In 1 Corinthians 11, Paul is taking them back because they have divisions amongst themselves and they are coming together, verse 20, but it is not for the express purpose of eating the Lord's Supper. They should be, that's the implied idea, but they were coming together to stuff their bellies. They had turned the Lord's Supper, kind of odd for us to think about because you think, how could you get full on that little bitty cup and that little bit of cracker you ate, but they had turned it and had abused it into, it seems, an entire meal. And so much so that some were eating and getting full and drinking and getting so involved in their food that they were doing that before others came, the poor it seems, and were able to even have any of the food. It's kind of like the people who showed up at the potluck late. And there wasn't any food left. And they go through the line and there's no food. And Paul says that this had become a social class difference. They were having a division over the Lord's Supper. And so Paul says, when you're coming together, you have homes, and I know that's caused trouble over the years, Could we eat in the church building and things? And Paul's just talking about this concept. He says, you have homes to eat in when you come together to the church. The purpose is not just to get your belly full. The purpose is to remember Jesus Christ. And so in verse number 23, Paul says, I want you to know that the Lord's Supper only involves two key elements. It only involves two key elements. It doesn't involve all these other foods. And he restricts the Lord's Supper to two elements. And he says we need to remind ourselves that on the night the Lord was betrayed, he took bread and he broke it and said, this is my body which is for you. And notice what he says. Do this in remembrance of me. Don't do it to get full. Don't do it just to have a fellowship meal. Don't do it to say you're better than other people and they had rich and poor divisions and things. But he says, do it in remembrance of me. Verse 25, in the same way, he said he took the cup and after supper said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me. The Lord's Supper is a meal that is in remembrance of Jesus. This is a covenant meal that goes back to the Old Testament festivals. In the Old Testament, they had many festivals that were memorial festivals. The most significant and famous one that is the history and the background of the Lord's Supper is, of course, the Passover. And in the Passover festival, which was established back in Exodus 12 through 15, when the children of Israel were in Egypt, and it was the night of the 10th plague, and they were told to kill the lamb and put the blood on the doorpost and upon the top, and the destroyer would pass over, and when he sees the blood, he will pass over. And then this was an established memorial that they were to observe every year to remember the day of Passover in Egypt. And it's in the context of this Passover meal that Jesus is celebrating with his apostles on Passover weekend when he's going to be betrayed and crucified, that Jesus takes these elements and he says, I want to add to that thought of the Old Testament, and I want you to realize that now this wine, this fruit of the vine, represents not just the blood of the lamb, but it represents the blood of myself. The blood that is shed for everyone, for the forgiveness of sins. And this unleavened bread, which was a part of the unleavened bread festival and was a part of Passover, and they had to clean the house and make sure there was no leaven, which stands for sinfulness, and make sure the house was pure, and they would eat unleavened bread on Passover. This unleavened bread that is a part of the Passover festival is now a part of remembering my body. My body. And so Jesus says this is an expanded memorial festival. We are to remember with a purpose. In the Old Testament, the thought of remembrance never involved just simply calling to mind and thinking about it. But we are to remember with a purpose. You know, I think we have some things that in our culture sometimes we forget the significance of them. For example, I can give you two holidays. Memorial Day and 4th of July. Both of those holidays were established for us to remember with a purpose. But sometimes we think more about barbecue and burgers and grilling out and fireworks, and we forget the purpose of Memorial Day and the purpose of 4th of July. But the purpose is to remember, to stop in our busy schedule, to stop and remember those who we need to honor as a nation. To stop and remember that we are independent and what happened in 1776 and how our nation was founded, to remember, but not just to remember, but to remember with a purpose. Remember with a purpose that we want to perpetuate that freedom. We want to live honorably for all those who have given the ultimate sacrifice so that we can have this freedom. Remember, but remember with a purpose. When we partake of the Lord's Supper, we remember, yes, He died on a cross. Yes, He shed His blood for me, but remember it with a purpose. I want to live for Him. I owe Him my love. I want to cast the sin out of my life because He died for me and I want to live with Him. Remember with a purpose. It's a memorial. It's a covenant meal like the Passover where we say we're a part of the covenant. We remember the commitment we made at our baptism. And so we observe it every Sunday. In Acts chapter 20, verse number 7, Paul had come to the city of Troas and he had wanted to meet with all the brethren, so he had to tarry or wait there for the church to come together. And he waited 7 days so he could meet with them on the first day of the week when they were gathered together with the purpose of breaking bread. They were coming together to celebrate the Lord's Supper, to break bread together. You see, the early church had the purpose of coming together to partake of the Lord's Supper. In chapter 11, verse 20, our text, we read that when they come together, it was not to do the Lord's Supper because they had abused it. It should have been, but they were coming together with the wrong idea. Let me say something about that this morning. And that is, there's a lot of reasons why you can come to church, and we're glad that you're here. You can come to church for meeting with fellow friends. You can come to church because your mom and daddy make you come to church. You can come to church because your wife expects you to come to church. You can come to church because you want to look cool in the business world. You can come to church because you want to study the Bible, which is a great reason to come to church. But let me tell you one thing. We need to be like the brethren at Troas. We need to want to come to church because we want to partake of the Lord's Supper. Because we want to partake of it with brethren. We want to remember. We want to honor. We want to celebrate Jesus. And so it's a memorial. In chapter 16, verse 2, we realize that they did this each or every first day of the week. And so we observe it every Sunday because that's the New Testament pattern. That's the New Testament example. That's the practice of the early church, witnessed by history and attested to by the Scriptures. We want to honor Christ and remember Him every day, but we come together on Sunday to celebrate His covenant meal and to remember Him. But notice the second phrase that I want to focus on is the word proclamation. Proclamation. In 1 Corinthians 11, in verse number 26, "For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until He comes." When you partake of the Lord's Supper, you are preaching a sermon with your actions. When you partake of the Lord's Supper, you are proclaiming to Jesus. And you're proclaiming to everyone around you, "I am a Christian." In fact, Paul would say, continue to read, verse 27, "Whoever therefore eats the bread and drinks the cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty concerning the body and blood of the Lord. But let a person examine himself, Then and so eat of the bread and drink of the cup. For anyone who eats and drinks without discerning the body eats and drinks judgment on himself. That is why many of you are weak and ill, and some have died. He may be referring to that spiritually or physically. But what he's saying is they were abusing the taking of the Lord's Supper. When we partake of the Lord's Supper, it is a serious and holy act. We need to examine our lives. Now, it does not mean that we are to examine our lives with the perspective that we are to be perfect. He says, whoever partakes of it in an unworthy manner. That's an adverb phrase. It doesn't mean that any of us could ever be fully worthy in our moral perfection. But what he's talking about in the manner by which we do it. Let me give you a couple of explanations. If we do it in a manner like they were doing it, when their focus, their mind was not on Jesus. It was on eating. It was upon the social gathering. It was not upon remembering Jesus. That's unworthy. It's unworthy. If we do it in a way, he's talking about here as well, without discerning the body. If I have problems with my brethren, or if I am living a hypocritical life, a life where there is known public sin in my life or private sin in my life, and I know I'm sinning, and I partake of the Lord's Supper, I'm doing that in an unworthy manner. Once again, we're not talking about a proclamation that we are morally perfect. None of us could take of it if that was the case. But we're talking about the manner in which we partake. Are we living a life of sin? You see, when you partake of that bread and you partake of that cup, you are saying, I am a disciple. I love Jesus and I'm a part of His church. But if you go out and live like Satan the rest of the week, Jesus says, don't come in and think your participation in my meal is acceptable. If you're partaking of my meal and live like Satan or follow Satan, I am not accepting your participation. You see, when we partake of the Lord's Supper, it is a proclamation that we are a part of Jesus. And it anticipates the heavenly fellowship with Christ. You know, most of us don't get small little fancy French word hors d'oeuvres. You know, the small little things. Some of us might go to a restaurant and we get appetizers. And those things, you know, are usually just a little bit. They just make you hungrier, don't they? I mean, you just get just a little bit of something and that just makes you hungrier and doesn't satisfy you at all. Well, I kind of think about the Lord's Supper has that aspect. This is an appetizer. It is. Revelation 19, Matthew 22, Jesus talks about the heavenly banquet. A full heavenly marriage ceremony, wedding with all this abundant food and blessings that is pictured for us in heaven. And the idea is this small meal is the appetizer. It is saying every Sunday, I'm going to eat of the heavenly banquet one day. One day I'll be eating this now in a spiritual way, but one day I'll be eating this with Jesus. I'll be with God in that heavenly meal. And so it is a proclamation that I'm going to heaven. I'm in fellowship with God. And I'm eating of His meal now. And I'm going to eat of it one day in heaven. Third, we would suggest that the Lord's Supper is a communion
It is a communion. What we mean by that is that it is not an individual thing solely. For example, if you drop back to the last chapter, chapter 10 that we studied, and you look at verses 16 and 17, you find out that our partaking of the Lord's Supper involves a participation in the blood of Christ. And the bread that we break, is it not a participation in the body of Christ? Because there is one bread. For we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. You see, Paul emphasizes that it's about our fellowship and our all having a part in the body. It is a common, that's the combined words where we get communion, it is a common union. It is appropriate at times for someone to partake of the Lord's Supper by themselves. For example, if someone is homebound or shut in, they may receive the Lord's Supper by themselves. But that is not the desired and the ideal or the biblical manner in which it should be partaken normally. In other words, if someone just says, you know, I'm just going to stay home on a regular basis and I'm not going to go participate in church, and I'll just get me a little grape juice and a little unleavened bread, and I'll do it at home, and that's fine. Let me suggest to you that that is a gross understanding of the purpose of the Lord's Supper. The purpose of the Lord's Supper is not just an individual mental remembering about Jesus' death, but it is a communion with the body that says, I am in, and this is the problem at Corinth, I am in a right relationship with my brothers. My poor brother over here in Corinth, I love him, so I'm going to wait on him until he gets off work, and I'm not going to go ahead and do this meal until he gets here because I respect him and I love him. It's about discerning the body. It's about loving one another. It's about professing we are one body. It's about saying, I'm in this with one another. I'm not in this as a lone ranger Christian, but I'm a part of the body. And let me say that that extends to every Christian that takes it on the first day of the week all around the globe. We are a part of a memorial, of a larger communion. And so it has two key aspects. The presence of Jesus. We remember Jesus, and Jesus is here, but it also has a participation with family. It's about doing it with one another and about remembering our duties for one another. Look at chapter 11, 20 through 22. When you come together, it's not to eat the Lord's Supper that you eat. For in eating, each one goes ahead with his own meal. One gets hungry, another gets drunk. What? Do you not have houses to eat and drink in? Or do you despise the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I commend you in this? No, I will not. We got to remember that the Lord's Supper is about more than just me. It's about the body. It's about one another. And so when we think about the Lord's Supper, we think about how it is a memorial, how it is a proclamation of the life I'm living and of the gospel I believe, and it is a communion with my fellow brethren. This morning, if you're not a child of God, let me encourage you to want to put Christ on in baptism, to give your life to Christ so that you can partake in this covenant meal with Jesus. If you've fallen away, if your life's not right and you want to come back, let me encourage you to come back so that you can partake with a clean and pure conscience in this holy meal with Christ. Please come as together we stand and as we sing.